everybody.
This is Michael C. Rupert, Director of Truth, here with you on the Lifeboat Hour on Sunday, the 2nd of June. Getting ready for a long, hot summer of 2013. Nightclub at the end of the world, yes. Crazy times here at 8,100 feet in the Rockies. Major, very angry, violent windstorms seem to be carrying things that we are seeing throughout the land. I want to thank the band Thunderclap Newman, Pete Townsend's other band, for bringing us in. I had to play that song tonight because this is the time to play that song. You know that it's right. And this is a very momentous day and a big show for us tonight. I would imagine now, since it's probably about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning there, that the streets in Istanbul, although bloody, although scattered and littered with debris, are comparatively quiet to what they have been. Probably with only cadres of Turkish youth who have been so instrumental in what's going on there, out keeping an eye out and keeping watch over a city that will be back to its fourth or fifth day tomorrow of unbelievable violence and bloodshed and heroism and courage and brutality, blood and honor mix in Turkey, and every major city is now affected. Started when the mayor of Istanbul wanted to tear down a few trees and make a new shopping mall in a park that was the last remaining commons, public commons in the city of Istanbul, and some occupiers showed up, and I watched the early videotapes. They behaved like the occupiers did in Zuccotti Park, and they were met with the worst brutality I have witnessed or experienced in my life. And tomorrow will be another day, and it is sure to bring us much, much more as the heroism of the Turkish people begins to permeate the consciousness of the world as it is tonight and as it has been. My Facebook page, Michael C. Rupert, has become one of many, several fairly important hubs for sharing information about what's going on. You will find there amongst majorly compelling photographs showing 200,000-300,000 people in the street. I'm not joking. I'm not exaggerating. Showing unbelievable violence, but you will also find a clip of some of the most horrendous brutality that I have ever witnessed in my life. And I'm old, and I've been around, and I'm an ex-cop, and I've hung out with special forces and Navy SEALs, and I saw the Rodney King riots firsthand. And I've watched a lot of this stuff, and I have never seen anything like what I am seeing out of the Turkish police, who are, I believe, at this moment, losing. And that is a moment that all of us who oppose infinite growth long for, because when the police and those who enforce the system stop doing it, we have won. And what this show is dedicated tonight to me helping the Turkish people to understand that they are not just fighting for themselves, they are fighting for all of mankind now. And the longer you fight, the more of us will join you, and the more of us will stand in solidarity with you. We may not be able to bleed with you, but we sure can send you our love, our music, and our art, and share this show. There was a great post on my page, my Facebook page, by Feral Sage, and this was, she's friends with Guy McPherson, who we love here, and she was writing to, Tayyip Erdogan, the Prime Minister of Turkey, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and she wrote, "You did such a good deed today, you don't even know. Today we witnessed Besiktas supporter help of Fenerbahce supporter," I don't even know what those are, "when he fell, after you gave the order to hit them. We witnessed university students share their bread and water. We witnessed Turks and Kurds hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder. We witnessed prostitutes help the pepper-sprayed people with water, milk, vinegar, and lemons. We witnessed transgender individuals open up their homes for the wounded to be treated. We witnessed voluntary lawyers, doctors, and even medicine students aid the hurt. We witnessed local people and shopkeepers make their Wi-Fi available so we could shout on social media when you censored the media. We witnessed hotels let the wounded take refuge in their spare rooms. We witnessed public transport bus drivers block roads so the riot police couldn't advance on us. We witnessed pharmacies open up through the night to help with first aid. Yes, our eyes are teary, but not because of your pepper gas, but because this is a proud day. Indeed. Indeed. Now, we will know, and I will note this before we go to our first song of the night, which is music is going to be extremely important to this show tonight. And it is this show, I hope, to be like the real blend that I'd always hoped for between art and reality and left brain and right brain working together. Prophecy of the Eagle and the Condor. Even though the mainstream is ignoring this, Facebook cannot ignore it. Major mass sympathetic demonstrations have broken out, occurred in Frankfurt with some serious confrontations, in Vancouver, in major cities throughout Europe, throughout the United States. People are standing up. There are spontaneous demonstrations taking place. Occupy has resurfaced. I do not know the effect of it yet. We will look for the reports on that. I'm expecting some major activity tomorrow. Occupy now in the form of Occupy, Reoccupy, and Blockupy. I like that, Blockupy. We saw some pictures that occupiers had returned to Zuccotti Park. I'm praying that there is more activity out of this, because Occupy, the energy that was Occupy that missed an opportunity, but broke amazing ground, the energy is still there, and it can be called out and re-triggered again. And I encourage all of my friends from Occupy, this is the time. There will be no other moments. So now we're only 10 minutes in, but I think it's time for a little music. And as I said, my Facebook page has just become extraordinarily active, and I thank all my Facebook friends both for helping us to focus on the stories that we're carrying and facilitating connections, but especially to my friend who I just learned how to pronounce his name, Ognjen Petrov. Hope I said that right. Ognjen Petrov from Bulgaria, Sofia. And he has been an amazing contributor to my Facebook page. He's also been relaying an enormous amount of great information and material out of Turkey today. Many people in Bulgaria throughout Eastern and Southern Europe are standing in complete solidarity. You haven't heard this on mainstream yet, but you better trust me, it's happening. But he made a post, and it's been one of my life themes of the importance of blending music with this. Well, there is a song, which is the song of the uprising of the people of Turkey. It is the anthem for the Turkish people right now. And let us not forget the Marseillaise, the Star-Spangled Banner, the great rallying, unifying songs of all time, and what they have meant and what they still rouse in us. The name of this song, I'm going to read you the lyrics before we play it, and I really thank Ognjen for bringing this to our attention, is Biz Halkiz. Maybe that's the artist. Bizhalkiz, but the song is We Are the People. That sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? But here's the lyrics, because the lyrics are all, of course, in Turkish. But the words, when translated into English, make familiar sense to all of us, sad and familiar sense to all of us who were occupiers, and to all of us over all the years since the Vietnam War, who have smelt the gas and marched, walked the walk. To your pepper, your gas, your batons, your sticks, to your harsh sticks, I say bring it on. Bring it on. Attack me shamelessly, tirelessly. My eyes are burning, but I don't bow, nor do I lessen. I am still free, I said. I am still right, I said to you. I am still human, I said. Do you think I would give up? Tell me. To your pepper, your gas, to your batons, your sticks, to your harsh sticks, I say, bring it on, bring it on. You slap in our face, you grudge against our voice. Cheers to all of you. I say, bring it on, bring it on. Raise your hand without hesitation and fear. The squares belong to us. Don't forget it. This nation is ours. We are still free, we said. We are still right, we said to you. I say, bring it on, bring it on. Now let's hear this song, which is the song that should be being played everywhere around the world in support of the people of Turkey. Bring it on. Biberine gazına, cebuna sopasına, tekmelerin asına, eyvallah, eyvallah. Thank you.
Göz gülüm dedim hala aklıyım dedim hala sana. Sana insanım dedim hala vazgeçer miyim söyle.
Do the people in Turkey a favor, the brave people in Turkey a favor. The link's on my Facebook page, and find that song and share it. Ask people to listen to it. Sometimes you have no idea what a difference it makes when all the people read the same sheet music at the same time or sing it at the same time. Now, to carry on this critical point that I'm making tonight, that what's happening in Turkey is of mega importance for all of us. Sometimes a surfer's out and waiting to surf and he catches the big wave. Well, the big wave that's going around the world is that all over the world, in Europe and in the United States and many other places, a lot of people are just pissed off and we're starting to speak out seriously. I'm going to play a couple of clips. And at first, the hypnosis of the Orwellian prison into which most people have been trapped would have them think that, well, events regarding the murders in Woolwich in England have to do with Muslims in Britain. They don't have much to do with Turkey, or events around the FBI execution of a guy named Michael Todashev, I think that's his first name. In Florida this week in connection with the Boston bombing. Remember, those were big events, right? Are not related, but what's becoming clear, and this is my absolute sense after a whole life of doing this, is that it is coming into focus that all of these events are decidedly and absolutely connected, which brings us to the place where, as opposed to the way it was when Occupy started in the fall of 11, they had 1,000 demands. The demands are becoming simple because what the face of the enemy is becoming more defined, and the enemy is infinite growth. The enemy is corporate tyranny. The enemy is fascism. The enemy is that thing which wants to make us think that there's no connection between all of this. But this is all goes by way of showing the people in Turkey in solidarity that you guys happen to have caught the wave for the frustration and the anger and the resentment and the expressive now standing forth or standing up that is being shown in so many places around the world. I want to play part of a clip for you, and these are both stories from Russia today, which I have to applaud. They are asking the questions that nobody will ask. They are interviewing the people that nobody else will interview, and they're doing a great job. The murders in Woolwich have triggered massive, of course, state-sponsored fascist oppression, exactly the same as when the Nazis went after the Jews. Around Kristallnacht, Britain is a fascist state and it is behaving thus, as is the U.S. But there was a great interview with an investigative journalist who's a friend of mine on Facebook and a guy I've totally come to admire named Tony Gosling this week. Now, I want you to listen to what he says. I'll let that speak for itself, and then I'll come back. We can roll the RT clip.
Now across to investigative journalist Tony Gosling. He's there in the UK. Tony, we've seen extremist groups like the English Defence League react, but are we now at a point where we're seeing tolerant, moderate people now turning against their Muslim neighbours?
Yes, well, this seems to be happening, doesn't it? It's extremely worrying, but let's not forget the Western intelligence services have been involved in criminal acts in the past, which have actually fueled this kind of sectarian violence, which seems to be beginning again here in Britain. I mean, there's some serious questions that MI5 have got to answer about what happened last week in London in Woolwich. I mean, first of all, obviously, the condolences go to Lee Rigby's family. And the horrendous part of all of that is that how did these guys, who were right at the very top of the terror watch list, they're ex-Elmajaroon people, how on earth did they not get spotted preparing for some kind of terror act? Was the car bugged, for example? This is one question that hasn't been answered. MI5 have gone very quiet on all these kinds of topics. How did they get ammunition? How did they get a revolver? Had they been following Lee? These kinds of questions. I mean, they've got something like 4,000 staff, MI5, and if they can't keep an eye on the people who are at the very top of the watch list, then there needs to be a real shake-up and heads need to roll there.
And the UK Home Secretary, though, has said there needs now to be a look at the Communications Data Act. Stronger powers of surveillance. That is necessary now, isn't it? Because if you did have those stronger powers of surveillance, then those guys may not have slipped through the net.
Well, they would say that, wouldn't they? No, I don't think this is the right thing to be doing at all. We need to actually have a look at who is to blame here. MI5's job is to stop people like this committing acts like this, and they haven't done it. And this isn't the first time. If we go back to the London bombings of 2005, you might remember that MI5 had been following these guys around as well. Now, all fair play to them if they can stop some plots taking place, but these guys were really at the top of the list, and if they can't stop these people, then what are they there for? You go back even to the 90s and the Bishopsgate bomb. We now know that MI5 were following the IRA around for days and in the months with this bomb beforehand, and yet still allowed them to blow it up. So the oversight of the security services really needs to be looked at, and I think we need to have some serious changes in the way it runs. The other thing is the oversight. MPs don't oversee MI5 and MI6. It's actually civil servants that do, and they are then overseen by a handful of MPs, including what I would suggest are rather lightweight MPs, pro-establishment is what I mean, like Hazel Blears and Malcolm Rifkin and people like this. You know, so there isn't any proper oversight. And what these intelligence services seem to do every time is to hide behind the veil of national security. We can't tell you what's going on. Even the inquiry that's been instituted into the failures of what happened last Wednesday is going to be kept entirely secret. And I'm afraid it's time for them to come out from under their shells and get a proper looking at, so that this kind of thing really can't happen again. And they're not going to play this game, I can assure you, of saying we need more money, we need more power, and we need more surveillance of the general population, because they had all the laws they needed to stop these people doing what they did last Wednesday. They don't need any more power whatsoever.
But the government is doing something by setting up a new terrorism task force to target hate preachers and extremism. Now, doing that, wouldn't that stop that sort of violent act?
Well, I actually don't think so. I think one of the things which would stop it is William Hague pursuing this foreign policy, which bears no relevance to what the British people actually want. It's not in our interests to be trying to arm Al-Qaeda in Syria, as he's been trying to do today over in Brussels. Thankfully, most of the rest of Europe thinks it's a ridiculous concept and is not going to let him do it. But we need to have politicians that actually represent what we say rather than business interests. Let's not forget, back in the 1990s, MI5 was actually courting business interests, saying, would you like HSBC, would you like us to come and spy spy for you, to give you information from our files. They were also saying the same to BAE Systems, one of the biggest arms manufacturers in the world. And I'm afraid this is an MI5 that's completely out of control. They just seem to do what they want, and there's no proper oversight of our security services. And once you get that sort of situation, then you've got the possibility of all sorts of things going on illegally. I mean, for example, we had this interview that was done on the BBC last Friday evening, where the chap, as he's being interviewed, special branch turn up at the BBC and arrest him as soon as he's coming out. Now, you can't just arrest people for telling what their own version, friends of terrorists, about various stories to do with, for example, this chap that committed this act, it looks like, last Wednesday, having been tortured and attempted to be recruited by MI5. The public needs to know these things, and we as parliamentarians as well need to know these things if they're going to have any proper oversight of our security services. And we really need to do that, I think, Bill, if we're going to have any kind of real anti-terror operation in this country. We need to have an accountable security services. At the moment, we don't have at all.
And does this draw attention to the public on Britain's foreign policy? In what way could this have an impact on future military engagements in Muslim countries?
Well, it doesn't just have an impact on the Islamic community, I can assure you that. Many people in this country are unhappy about, I mean, look, for example, what we've done to Iraq, an illegal war. Now we've had another bomb attack today with 50 people killed, something over 100 people injured today. We've made a mess and a wreck of these places. The Arab League's prediction that we were going to open the gates of hell in Iraq has come true. And actually, Britain and Tony Blair at the time, obviously George Bush too, are responsible for this. So it's not just the Muslim population that are angry. The other thing is we've got other extremists here in Britain. That is to say, sort of anti-Islamic extremists. 2 weeks ago, a man, a pensioner, coming home from his mosque in Birmingham, in the Midlands of Britain, was murdered. And this got almost no coverage whatsoever. And we need to make sure that the security services are taking exactly the same sort of measures against the anti-Muslim, like the English Defence League, these kinds of organisations, as they are against the Islamic organisations. And one thing that I've noticed today in the press here they're trying to do is to close down or at least possibly ban Hizbut Tahrir, which is does not advocate violence at all. I mean, this is ridiculous. What they're trying to do is actually demonise Muslims in a similar way to the Nazis demonised Jews back in the 1930s. And it's ridiculous. We've got to stop that. We don't want that from MI5. Thank you very much.
Investigative journalist Tony Gosling, live there in the UK. Thank you very much indeed for your thoughts.
Well, I have to tell you that Tony Gosling has cojones, which is grande, big ones, to have said that in what is so overtly a violent fascist state, so clearly and so eloquently, speaks enormously. But it says that all of us are becoming aware of the threat which is closing upon us rapidly and from many different directions. It has nothing to do, there's no issue about Islam really involved at all, not even in Turkey, although they would try to have you believe that Prime Minister Erdogan's is too Islamist. That's not what it's about at all. It's about fascism closing down. Now, to put that in context, this week it was announced that Goldman Sachs and UBS are to lead the privatization of the Royal Mail. They've been hired by the British government to sell off the Royal Mail. That's the, you know, British Postal Service. And you know what's going to happen, of course. Service is going to deteriorate. Pensions are going to disappear. Benefits are going to disappear. Assets are going to be sold off. Also, the courts may be privatized in Britain. Really? You're going to make a judge an employee of a corporation, and this is the most ugly thing I've ever seen, or one of. I mean, who's keeping count? It's hard to keep track. But they would save £1 billion a year so they can spend it on more guns and more weapons. The courts privatized? That is just stupid. So what's the similarity with what's going on in Britain and Tony Gosling's courage the people of Turkey? I believe he'd be out on the street, and I know I would here if it was my city in those situations. What it is that fascism, corporate fascism, remember what Mussolini said, fascism should more properly be called corporatism because it is the perfect merger of power between the corporation and the state. Well, that's what's happening to build a new mall in Istanbul, and that's what's going on in London, and they use all the other distractions. But this energy is here, and it's out. We are coming up on the bottom of the hour, and we're going to go without a station break tonight. There's just too much to cover, and there's too much toward this show that I want to present to you tonight that's weaving the music so powerfully in with all of this. Let me just say here, it's close enough, 7:29. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, with you on the Progressive Radio Network on the Lifeboat Hour. Okay, now here's another clip, and the clip is of me. And I believe it was Tuesday of this week. It seems like eons ago. I was the lead story on RT Russia Today's Prime News out of Moscow on their television broadcast. And this is also speaking to the same theme. Now, I want you to listen to this one so that we tie this all back together and realize really what the picture here is that is emerging. Let's hear about events in the United States. Let's play the RT clip on the FBI execution, which took place this week.
Well, let's try and pick apart a few theories now, shall we? For more on the shooting of Ibrahim Tudashev, let's talk live to investigative journalist and former Los Angeles police officer Mike Rupert. Hi there, Mike. Thanks for taking the time to be with us. We're hearing there are a number of agents in the room at the time with Tudashev, but there's still no clear picture of what really happened apart from that. Why has no more information come forward yet?
Well, there are two glaring problems with what we have as an already contradictory account from law enforcement about how the events went down. The first of which is the man was unarmed. And I will hearken back to my days on the streets in 1976 in Los Angeles when Olympic medalist Juan Carlos got combative with a bunch of police officers. Not one of us drew our guns, and we were getting thrown around like rag dolls. And we were all trained and we were all very, very fit at the time. So there's an escalation of force scale, which was obviously or apparently not followed in this case. But my second huge problem with the law enforcement story is he was supposed to be signing a confession to a triple murder. I don't care, even if you are the FBI, which doesn't have a good reputation, you have somebody is going to sign a confession for a triple murder. You have him in a jailhouse in a secure setting, and the police officers, law enforcement personnel around him are not armed because he's in a secure setting. This was at best for the FBI horribly mishandled, but it sounds to me very much like they went there with the intent to provoke him and stage a shooting, much like was done with the Black Panther Party members like Fred Hampton in the 1960s. The standard police procedure everywhere in the world was not followed here.
And if you listen to what his father says he's got the autopsy pictures. Indeed he has. We can't show them. They're too graphic. His father says there were 7 shots, 1, crucially, in the back of the head. Why would you potentially shoot someone in the back of the head if this was self-defense, I guess, is the question.
Well, I guess historically, if we go back to Nazi Germany and the Gestapo, or even in the Stalin era to the days of Joseph Beria, these were executions. These were silencing. Dead men tell no tales. And I will speak as an American citizen. My country is behaving like a totalitarian state run amok.
The FBI, as we've said, says it's going to launch an investigation, but it also says it's going to take months to complete that investigation. Why so long?
Well, that's pretty much standard in shooting cases. I mean, of course, law enforcement
agencies... But
wouldn't
you think answers are needed here reasonably quickly?
Yes. Well, again, that's a common sense approach, and I would demand quick answers for this. There's no reason for 6, 7, God knows how many law enforcement personnel to have been there armed, holding him in his house for 8 hours like that. And that's their own official statement. We need some answers to the obvious questions first.
Do you think we will see an independent investigation here?
No, absolutely not. We have seen, a long and accelerating deterioration in our civil liberties here in the United States, NDAA, and in the Boston Hunt, the Constitution was shredded in terms of military and police on civilian streets. There has been no accountability. And at this point, after a 30-year career documenting corruption in my government. I see the aggressiveness and the lawlessness getting worse and unchecked, and it's extremely arrogant right now.
Mike, Tadashi's father says there may have been an ulterior motive for the killing. You kind of touched on this earlier on, reasons maybe why the guy was shot in the back of the head, allegedly, if it had happened. What do you think that ulterior motive, what do you think he knew? What do you think it was about that his father's talking about here?
Well, I would be purely in the realm of speculation there, and I'm a journalist, too. I try not to do that too much. But it's obvious from all the information that has surfaced that the Sanaref brothers had been groomed, cultivated by American intelligence agencies, including the FBI, including the CIA. And we know of agent provocateurism on the part of U.S. intelligence agencies. So I would very strongly suspect that he was someone who could have exposed U.S. government complicity in bringing about the bombings in the first place.
Interesting. Investigative journalist and former police officer Mike Rupert, thanks for being on the line there.
Thank you.
Well, people of Turkey, at least you know that there are a lot of people standing up in their own way to speak truth to power and to live truth to power. But now I think the theme is becoming clear. What we are seeing happening all over the world, and I've been developing this for some time on the show now, is an overly aggressive, now out-of-the-closet, goose-stepping fascist move to take, seize, control everything. Liquidations are underway of some Canadian cities. And make no mistake, this is all about make money on the way up and make money on the way down. Governments in collapse, governments are going to disappear. They're going to be sold off piecemeal, like in a bankruptcy sale, to pay off the so-called the creditors and the crooks. And human industrial civilization is being shut down. And for me, those trees in a park in Istanbul are as important as the Ministry of Justice in Britain and the Royal Mail and our Constitution in the United States, because they all weave us all together. That's so important to see. So what I am seeing and what I am feeling now is that the brave people of Turkey who are bleeding and dying, who are refusing to give in. I saw a video today on my Facebook page where the cops are getting tired. The Turkish police are getting tired. And I understand, not fully confirmed yet, but the Turkish military is not siding so far with the police. So we're getting a Hosni Mubarak kind of situation happening in Turkey right now. The Erdogan government may well be doomed, and we should not be overly optimistic. What's important is that the Turkish people do not give up, and that we unite with them so that we cannot be sold out for all of the pity-ass bones that were thrown out after the Arab Revolution that haven't changed anything. People of Egypt are not much better than they were, nor of any other country. So this is helping us to focus on what we need to demand. Until you change the way money works, you change nothing. That's the enemy, infinite growth. Yeah. But the Turkish people now have become the focal point, and that's what we needed. I wrote recently that we needed some kind of galvanizing event or galvanizing moment, and Abraham Lincoln blamed the start of the Civil War on two seminal events. One was the abolitionist John Brown's raid on the Federal Armory at Harper's Ferry, Virginia, I believe in 1859. He was hung for that. And Harriet Beecher Stowe's book, Uncle Tom's Cabin. Art and action. Art and action. Art and action. So important. In doing this, and Turkey has become, and it will be that event. But I saw policemen getting overrun today. Those guys are getting tired of beating on people. They've shot so many tear gas canisters. their arms are getting tired from beating on people. There are shots of them just sacked flat on their backs on the grass. and they're losing it. And in one amazing video clip, there was a crowd of maybe 200-300 people unarmed with rocks faced off a phalanx of 25 or 30 Turkish policemen and with rocks and overran them and took their shields. Yeah, baby, that was good. That's the will. That's the French Revolution. That's the American Revolution. That would certainly be the September and October revolutions against the Tsar, all of which were controlled, by the way. This one, we hope, will not, the outcomes of which were controlled. But it has been said over and over again, and let me underscore this point. The revolution ends when those enforcing it and brutalizing and carrying out its will no longer go along with it. They refuse to do their jobs. It's over like that. And I have no doubt that the Turkish people are going to hang in there, and I really have a sense of momentum swinging strongly in their favor. So when you guys get back to the streets tomorrow, keep your chins up, hold your heads high, don't give in, and fight back, because you are scoring victories for all of us. I'm reminded of the quote from, I believe it was Reinhold Niebuhr, talking about the Nazis. First they came for the Jews, and I did not say anything. Then they came for the communists, and I did not say anything. Then they came for the socialists, and I did not say anything. Then they came for the Catholics, and I did not say anything. And when they came for me, there was nobody left to say anything at all. It's a paraphrase, but you get the point. So, in the context of all of this, and further weaving us into the fact that we are all one, there is nothing but the human race, and those of us who are on one side are Gaians, and those because we know and understand that we have killed or are killing the planet upon which we live. There's some more distressing nuclear news tonight. The Tornis reactor in Scotland was shut down due to seaweed threats, but South Korea has shut down several faulty, that's from the Bangkok Post, nuclear reactors because it turns out all of their safety certificates were forged. There's a 200-acre landfill near Bridgeton, Missouri, which is on fire. It's a huge underground fire, which is close to an underground storage area. I mean close within, I guess it's within several hundred yards of a nuclear waste facility that was built during World War II in the Manhattan Project that's full of horribly toxic nuclear waste. ENE News and Energy News today had a very, not today, but this week, had a very compelling story that fire may reach that landfill and cause an explosion. That would be one of the biggest dirty bombs ever conceived of. And we're living with those threats all around us. And let me remind you that we have passed multiple tipping points in climate collapse, that a 2-4 degree centigrade increase in the temperature on the planet is cooked in, if you will, locked in. 19 or 20 separate studies, thanks to our dear friend Guy McPherson, a professor emeritus of climate and environmental science from University of Arizona, has been a guest on this show several times, for bringing that forward. Near-term extinction is a reality for us on many, many, many different levels. We are all together in one pot, and the Turkish people are unifying us. They are causing us to cheer. They are causing us to sit up. They are awakening the spirit of Occupy, reawakening the spirit of Occupy. And I call to all my brothers and sisters from the Occupy movement, if you don't get your asses back out on the street now and go reoccupy some of that turf with Turkish flags and emblems, with signs of respect and solidarity for the Turkish people, you're all a bunch of hypocrites. Get back out there again. Get back in those parks again and put your lives at risk again. You were willing to get gassed before. You weren't beaten. We weren't beaten. I wasn't, I was ready to. Anything like the people in Turkey are, except for the ones in Oakland who were shot in the head. A Marine veteran with a tear gas canister, skull fracture, and a active member of 75th Rangers who was beaten savagely by the Oakland police. You need to get your butts back out on the street right now. Because your brothers and sisters who are fighting for all of us are getting the crap beat out of them, and they're dying in Turkey. Which now brings us time for our second song, Welcome to a Nightclub at the End of the World. God, live radio is like this, man. This is amazing. I wonder how they did it in the 30s and 40s. Wow, this is just, it's amazing. New White Trash got some amazing news. Now, I've shared with you a few of the songs along the way, and we started releasing some of the songs before they were fully mixed in the belief and in the hope that in hearing them, people would say, that's a really cool song, and we're musicians, we understand the tracks need to be laid, they need to be mastered, blah, blah, and which takes money and support, but it has worked. And we were notified today, Doug Lewis came and told me that our good friend, Mr. James Eves III, who runs the website CoolAlbumReview.com. CoolAlbumReview.com. This is a pretty heavy thing in the music biz. They reviewed our first album, Double Wide, and they've announced that they're going to be reviewing our new album, Age of Authority. It was going to be called Inner Reach, but Age of Authority is so right on. I just love how this music dials into events. And they're going to review our album as the cool album of the day. You can see that. I've got the link on my Facebook page. You can go look at that, coolalbumreview.com. And we have just finished this. And I want to extend my deepest thanks to the backbone and the brains of New White Trash, Doug Lewis, my housemate, who has worked so hard on this and just who has been so meticulous and so careful, to my bandmates, Kristen Vigard, the original Annie, from Broadway, who was in the original cast of Hair, an amazing singer, to a lot of great musical talent, background singers, including Jessica Hollipier, and Leah Petmezis, excuse me, and Chris doing the background on some of the songs, to an amazing sound engineer, Bob Rice, who's also played bass and some other instruments on songs, but especially also to Mr. Arthur Barrow, formerly of Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, who is just the most magical, powerful bass player who, on hearing some of these songs, laid down bass tracks for 9 of our tracks out of the 18 on the album. And this has just come together almost as if Spirit wanted this music to be ready at this time. The album will be finished and available for sale in July. We're going to have new mixes up. But this brings me to a song that I'm really just thrilled to play tonight. You know that I don't play any instrumentation, but I do get songwriting credit because I contribute some notes, some melodies, and some, you know, some harmonies or backgrounds to the songs, but I also write much of the lyrics. And this is a song that I wrote a good chunk of with bandmate Doug Lewis. And it may be the best, I think it is probably the best vocal performance of my life. And I'm just tickled to death that I got to experience with goosebumps the synchronicity of having this song ready to play on this night, which hopefully will tie all of us who are human beings and aware of our connectedness and relationship to each other. We are all Turks tonight. That helps us to reinforce our conscious connections with all things. Mitakiye Oyasin. Here's the song called Son of Your Love. Couldn't be better timing. Let's go.
By now you know the first and last verse of the line. And first name of the one. Big brother wraps your fear and burns a shadow in the sun. In the sun of your love.
In the sun of your love. In the sun of your love.
In the sun of your love. In the sun of your love. In the sun of your love. thing is paralyzed. Arise and then a stall. No one's going anywhere, and a great shadow's gonna fall. Come to see who's holding cards. For years we've measured life in yard by bloody yard. But now the sun is up and shadows flee in dread. Liberation's dawning, race, see a rainbow sky instead.
The time has come to see who's holding cards. For years we've measured life in yard by bloody yard. But now the sun is up and shadows flee in dread. Liberation's dawning rays see a rainbow sky instead. Amazing how all of this comes together. It's almost like there was a unifying wisdom and a force and a love that was weaving us all more closely together. I've just been looking at my Facebook page and Earth First News. Earth First, God, that's the old Daryl Cherney bunch. Hi, Daryl, if you're out there. By the way, I had a couple of names bad earlier. It was Lavandin Beria, who was ahead of Joseph Stalin's NKVD, his secret police, and it was Ibrahim Tadashev, who was executed by the FBI. Try to get it right. San Francisco activists liberate park in solidarity with Turkish resistance, just off the Earth First News. You're not going to hear it on major media, but we are getting it out by Rabbit. That's Nom de Plume. On June 1st, in solidarity with the massive resistance in Turkey, which began 6 days ago, liberate the land activists in San Francisco marched to a park space known as Hayes Valley Farm and began an occupation. This piece of land is scheduled to be turned into condominiums. Go, go, go. And as I look further around latest developments, I see that it has not been a quiet night in Istanbul. But the video is getting out, and there is some really disturbing video, and it's all in Turkish, so I cannot read it. But the video is very, very clear. It's clearly late at night, and there are large police vehicles with these water cannons, which have been, people have died apparently as a result of those. I've seen people. One man reportedly got a broken neck and died from getting shot at very, very close range, like in the head. And with these water cannon that are so powerful, and there's a video that I have just watched on my Facebook page. It looks like, you know, it's way late at night, and like I've seen at many Occupy sites and many other protests when, you know, the young are out and most of the crowds have gone away, but there's still some substantial crowds. And this police vehicle, these people are walking along like a promenade, much like you'd see in Brooklyn, over a wall to a cliff to the ocean. And I don't know how far it is from the top of the cliff to the sidewalk to the ocean. But this police vehicle with water cannons just drives calmly along and starts spraying people over the edge into the water. This is the kind of brutality that is taking place, and I cannot emphasize enough how bloody this is. And if these people don't give up, we owe it to them in whatever way we can to stand up with our brothers and sisters in Turkey. Anonymous has also raised its head, and we hope to see more and very effective action from Anonymous. They have announced that they are targeting Turkish government websites. Also, I would ask that Anonymous, anybody out there with capability, get involved in whatever way possible in sharing and distributing helping to broadcast the video of these events. If words are worth, pictures are worth a thousand words, there are Dostoevsky novels being flowed out now in video and images, which are indisputable. Anonymous has announced, Turkey, you are not alone in solidarity with all our brothers and sisters in the world who are fighting for freedom. And that, my dear friend, is the point. That is what is being fought for here. It is our freedom and theirs, and the freedom of all human beings. I've also just received on Facebook a map of all the cities in Turkey. Oh, my God, it's amazing. There's dots everywhere, but we also know that it's spread to Bulgaria, to other parts of Europe. And we really hope, and this would be a request to all of you out there, if you become aware of any significant activity in support of the people of Turkey, please go and post it on my Facebook page with a link. We have heard the reports of San Diego, Frankfurt, Vancouver, many cities in the United States, but I want more detailed coverage because it is as useful to the people in Turkey to see the images of people standing up with them around the world. That's what the mainstream will really try to curtail and prevent and not report. But I think that's a critical gift that can be given back to the people of Turkey, which can give them energy. And again, this is not a revolt anymore. This is a revolution, but it is a revolution, I think, seriously, of the kind that Graham Hancock would applaud, of the kind that I would applaud, of the kind that George Orwell would applaud, maybe Terence McKenna would applaud. This is a revolution of consciousness, because the realization, I believe, I feel this in my heart, and I've given 30 years of my life to get to this point, and I have never been this excited, even as I am sickened to see the amount of bloodshed. But I do believe we are reaching the 100th monkey, and the people of Turkey may be that 100th monkey. We are all in this together. I have every confidence that the people of Turkey, and especially Istanbul, will prevail. They are just stubborn. They are brave, they are incredibly proud, they are resilient, and they are giving up their lives, but they show no sign of letting up. So I think they will prevail. Now, what is important is for all of us, especially for the benefit of the people in Turkey, to remember that we're not just fighting to change a regime here. That's been done. Ask the people of Egypt. Ask the people of any of the countries where regime change came as a result of the Arab Spring. And ask all of the people who have been part of major demonstrations in Europe, you know, and including the riots and the revolts in Europe, if they've done any good. But here, I think it is coming clear as to what's on the table, and we can win this one. We needed Turkey. We needed the events in Turkey desperately to mobilize us. It's been a historical fact for as long as man has been alive. We needed the triggering event to spark and rouse the people's emotion. And I, frankly, based upon what I have seen, could not be more impressed than I am with what I have seen out of the Turkish people. I hope that the people of the United States and all sentient peoples, First Peoples, all of us who would like to stop the massacre of indigenous peoples and the stealing and the burning of their lands, all of us who want to stop this infinite growth machine can walk and move and talk and think and sacrifice with the same courage as we see from the people of Turkey. Now, this is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. I've been at this for 18-plus hours today or so, and I'm tired. that this was a good show, and we will be back next week, and we will watch and we will participate in our own salvation and our resurrection and redemption until then. I'll see you on the Lifeboat Hour. Come back. See me next week. Good night.